seriously want.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
That should be a new theme song for when President Donald Trump gets back on the campaign trail. What is that? Nazareth. Hair of the dog. I guess in the ear of the dog. Whatever it is. Nazareth, no big group as far as I was concerned. But the reason we played that cut is because they used the term son of a bitch. S-O-B. Which has become part of the vernacular of our president when he's out there in public at these rallies. But we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you on your drive home or your drive as you multitask to your second place of business, courtesy of NJDiet.com. We're going to get a update from Bill Evans about back-to-back, belly-to-belly, the trifecta, the troika, the trinity of nor'easters that will be clobbering us sometime tonight. But first, let's go to the audio tape. There was the president primetime improvising on a stage outside of Pittsburgh in a very contested congressional race, which will be determined tomorrow.
You ever see the story where it's 1999, I'm on Meet the Press, a show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
So now the next day, Chuck Todd had on Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin to discuss Trump's use of words.
Many people, including myself, raised their kids to respect the office of the presidency and the president of the United States. When he uses vulgarity to talk about individuals, what are they supposed to tell their kids?
Again, I'll be with my kids this morning, and I'll be focused on them, on what the president is doing to protect the United States, its citizens, and more importantly,
its economy. So he's not immoral? Don't worry about his values? Don't worry about him as a role model?
I've never said that whatsoever, so I don't know why you're putting these words in what I'm trying to say.
What are you supposed to say when he's using these vulgarities to kids?
I think you should be focused on what the policies are. He's using those vulgarities in the context of a campaign rally. And obviously, there were a lot of funny moments on that rally.
And then finally, cabinet member in charge of education, Betsy DeVos, earlier today on the Today Show, speaking about the president's choice of language.
During this piece that aired right before you came on, you had the president using what we used to call a dirty word to describe one of my colleagues. And I wonder, as the education secretary who's in charge of what our kids learn, what do you think of that kind of language? Would you wash someone's mouth out with soap?
Well, I would probably use different language myself, and I think we all have an opportunity and a responsibility to be examples to our kids.
Would you include the president?
That would include the president as well.
On the line to discuss it, in defense of the president, as he oftentimes has had to go to the mat, is Jeffrey Lord from the heartland of the Keystone State, Pennsylvania, Harrisburg. Thanks for jumping on board again, Jeff.
Hello there, Curtis. How are you?
Jeff, you know, I was so disappointed. Last night, I'm waiting for Stormy Daniels to make her appearance on 60 Minutes, and I got a chance to see Betsy DeVos instead. I mean, look, she had a lot of content there, but you'd have to admit that was a little disappointing, wasn't it, Jeff?
Well, I don't know. I might want to see Stormy Daniels myself. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be like our board operator here, Brian Mangalucci. She went to the show she performed in Long Island and was sticking dollar bills in her G-string. What a cheapskate.
No way. I that's not my... I'm very well-behaved, Curtis.
Well, speaking of well-behaved, the president is being accused by some of not being well-behaved when he takes to a stage publicly. He does these rallies, as you were so used to seeing during the campaign. and will say something untawdry. In this case, son of a bitch, as he had said down in that rally for Judge Roy Moore when he was discussing in Pensacola, discussing the NFL players taking the knee.
Well, look, first of all, two things. Number one, a little history here. I mean, Donald Trump is not the first president to speak like this. I would call your attention to that wonderful letter that Harry Truman wrote to a reporter for the Washington Post who was a music critic, who criticized his daughter Margaret's singing concert. And I'll just read you two lines from it. "Someday I hope to meet you. When that happens, you'll need a new nose, a lot of beefsteak for black eyes, and perhaps a supporter below. Westbrook Pegler, a gutter snipe, is a gentleman alongside you. I hope you'll accept that statement as a worse insult than a reflection on your ancestry. Harry S. Truman." So, number one, Curtis, presidents talk like this. But number two, as everybody in that audience knows, I mean, the notion that you're supposed to teach your kids not to talk like this, there's been a massive parental failure because just about every adult I've met in life has used this phrase somewhere along the line. And people in that audience knew it.
I understand that, but you'd have to say that even members of his own cabinet, like we saw Betsy DeVos and others, are somewhat embarrassed when the president uses that kind of language in public.
Yeah, I just think it's a mistake. The hypocrisy here is just stunning. I've heard this kind of thing from Washington journalists. If it's not to be said, then why do I hear it all the time? This is ridiculous. If you notice, one of the other things that I don't know has gotten a lot of comment from that speech here in Pennsylvania the other night. At some point, he mimicked politicians who would want to be president. He squished his voice into a monotone to say, "God bless America," this, that, and the other thing, and then he turned around and walked away like a robot and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it sort of looked like Vice President Pence.
Well, I had to laugh because that's, in essence, what a lot of people in that audience and a lot of people I've met at these Trump rallies think of politicians. Hmm. They think that this is all routine, that it's all phony as the day is long. And that's what they like about Donald Trump.
Well, I need
the real deal.
I need help with you on this, Jeffrey, because I'm very confused. First off, the president on Saturday threw the gauntlet down to Oprah, suggested she get in the race for the presidency.
Oh, I'd love Oprah to win. I'd love to beat Oprah. I know her weakness. No, I know her weakness. I know her. You know, I know her very well. I was on her last show, or one of the last, I guess the last week. She had Donald Trump and Donald Trump's family. My, we've come down a long way, haven't we? But think of it. I know her weakness. Wouldn't we love to run against Oprah? I would love it. That would be a painful experience for her.
But then Oprah's response, which confuses me, maybe you can help me, Jeffrey, is this.
I am very much in touch with my inner GPS, mm-hmm. the voice. I'm in touch with God.
Yeah.
The voice of God.
In fact, you said, in, again, People Magazine, if I have this quote right, you said, "If God, if you think I'm supposed to run, you got to tell me, and it has to be so clear, not even I can miss it."
Yeah, that's right.
So have you had any signs at all?
Not one.
I want to know, Jeffrey, what is it about these people, Ted Cruz on the right, God ordered him, his father, and his wife that he should run for president. Oprah waiting for God to have a conversation with her. Every time I try to have a conversation with God, he introduces me to Mr. Click. Well, what is it? Well, and I noticed the president never says that he has conversations with God.
To be serious about this, I think when people talk about this, however elegantly or inelegantly they talk about it, I think what they're really talking about is that sort of inner burst of, thought that comes that tells them to do something. You formed the Guardians there, right?
Yes, Guardian Angels.
And I don't, I'm just guessing, but I don't think you probably got a letter from the mayor saying, "Curtis, go do this."
In fact, he had me locked up 76 times.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you got the idea. Mm-hmm. Now, you can describe that as hearing the voice of God, or you can say, "I had a great idea," however you want to say it. But I think we're talking about the same thing here in their defense.
Well, this is why I want to I want to sort of slice this now. We have Ted Cruz had a conversation with God. Oprah's waiting to hear from God to give her the green light. But Hillary only spoke, channeled to Eleanor Roosevelt. Did she not? Was she not able to speak to God?
Well, you see, in Hillary's generation, they thought Eleanor Roosevelt was God.
But, I mean, come on, Jeffrey, you'd have to admit, I give credit to this president for not suggesting that he's having daily conversations with God.
I mean, he is Queens. He's God bless America. He is the real deal. And if he doesn't have a phony, you know, bone in his body, he's not capable of it.
All right, one final question here, Jeff. He had the line of the day in which he called for the death penalty for drug dealers, you know, particularly those who are selling a lot of opioids, who are merchants of death. I mean, you're there in Pennsylvania, the Keystone State, one of the many that have been devastated by opioids and heroin. How do you think that resonates with voters?
I think it does resonate with some. And, you know, to mention a name that we all know, Eric Boling lost his son to this, and he is friends with the president, and I think is now getting involved in this. And, you know, I think that they're, I mean, I first became aware of this during the New Hampshire primary and here and et cetera, because I hadn't heard of it. I get it now, and there's a lot of emotion around it. So I think he probably strikes a chord.
And do you think that that sort of has cachet with the non-Trump voter? Because obviously he's got his core voters, let's say about 35%, who indicate they're Trump supporters through thick and thin.
Curtis, if somebody is a quote-unquote non-Trump voter is not swayed by that, they're not swayable. And I frankly don't think they need that to not be swayable. I think that they're probably not there, nor never have they been.
All right, to appreciate that, that's Jeffrey Lord from the heartland of the Keystone State. And let me tell you something, I got to tell you. I sang that Doobie Brothers song for years, Jesus is Just All Right by Me. I try to call Jesus up on my smartphone, my iPhone. As an insurance policy, you know, I know a little Yiddish as a Gentile, having worked in retail. So I talk to Hashem, and neither one of them answers my calls. How is it that Oprah can speak to God from the left, Ted Cruz to God from the right, and I'm still waiting for God to answer my call?
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
One last time, Ozzy. We thought that was last week. But guess what? Back to back, belly to belly. It's a trifecta, a trinity, a troika, as we are braced here in the tri-state area to get hit with a nor'easter. This will be the third one in 10 days. On the line to discuss it, Bill Evans, our weather forecaster and the meteorologist at Channel 7 Eyewitness News. Bill, three times in less than 2 weeks?
That's the trifecta, isn't it, Curtis? That's global warming. That's climate change. That's not what it is at all. That's called March is like a lion. 3 in 10 days. That is a lot. But it's been done before, and there's actually been 5 in 14 days in history. So it does do that in March. I'm working on a dance because next Tuesday is the beginning of spring. So I'm doing my spring vernal equinox dance as I speak.
So will you be actually going into the middle of Central Park, where a lot of times you take your readings, and running around butt naked celebrating what, spring solstice?
You know, if that, you know, as embarrassing as that could be, and it's not a great picture as that presents, if it would work, you know, I think it's worth it.
All right, but now, Bill Evans, we've suffered bad weather before in bouts, you know, in long periods. Why do you think it's taking all of these energy providers and energy companies so long to get people's power back? We've seen it in Westchester, in Rockland, in New Jersey. I mean, what is happening out there that appears to be different than what has happened in the past?
I don't know. I think it is they don't want to spend the money. They have meteorologists. They knew that that wind was coming. That wind had been forecast for 7 or 8 days out. And I can only tell you an example of what happened to me once. When I lived in Connecticut, I lived in Connecticut for 18 years. CP&L, the power would always go out. And so I called the CEO myself of CP&L, and I said, look, I'll give you the weather weeks in advance during nor'easter time. I'll give you the weather. I'll call you up and tell you what the weather's going to be. He said, great. So I called him up and gave him the weather. We had a massive nor'easter. Power is out all over Connecticut. Stayed out of power for about 4 to 5 weeks. And he goes in front of the cameras and says, you know, we had no idea the storm was coming. To the intensity that it was. And I'm watching this in disbelief. So I think it's, you know, getting the crews there, getting a massive amount of crews in place. I think sometimes they either don't believe the forecast or they don't want to believe the forecast. But the wind field on that particular storm was forecast 8-10 days in advance.
So based on your observations, what can we expect this time? Your prognostication, how many more trees will go down? How many more telephone poles and wires will it drag down with it?
Well, I think if you're in Nassau, Suffolk County, and Fairfield County, New Haven County, New London, Connecticut, this is your storm. It's not going to be an inland storm this time. There will be some wind. There'll be some 30-mile-an-hour wind. But, you know, we've had enough wind now that's taken care of the trees that could be loosened up. There may be a few that go down this time, you know, up I-80, 84, 287, inland Westchester, you know, on up the Hudson River Valley, that kind of thing. But this is a storm for the east. The snowfall totals are going to be the east. You could get 6 inches Nassau County. You could get 8, 9, 10, maybe even a foot Suffolk County. You're looking at 6 inches in Connecticut. You're looking at 3 in the city, and the farther west and north you go, you're looking at about 1. There'll be some wind with it tomorrow, but it's about a 30-mile-an-hour wind, but it'll be a 55-mile-an-hour wind on Long Island. And so they're going to get hit very hard tomorrow. The snow starts tonight at 1 a.m. There should be 2 or 3 inches of snow on the Northern State, the LIE, Sunrise Highway, Montauk Highway, Southern State by the time we get to 6 o'clock in the morning. So it will be terrible out there. And along 95 in Connecticut and the Merritt Parkway.
So we're saying that based on the Long Island Railroad indicating that January had its worst on-time performance in the history of the railroad, it'll probably be just non-existent tomorrow. Metro North, the subway system, the Michigash we're used to every day will be trebled, right?
Well, what we see on a normal sunny day is delays on the Long Island Railroad. You know, and I hate to say that for the men and women who work and the managers and all that, but they're having a lot of trouble right now, and they will really have trouble tomorrow. I think they're saying, the last I heard, was they're going to go for normal service tomorrow and give that a shot. But I can't see it being very good at all, particularly by the time, you know, you get to 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, right into the rush hour. I don't see it being good. I think if you're in Suffolk County and you're Nassau County, you stay home tomorrow.
Well, you're right, because the MTA, no matter what day it is, whether it's snow, sleet, rain, or shine, they suck. But what it also means is that March has come roaring in like a lion. And we got to hope, like the Democrats do, it'll come back like a lamb in that special congressional race tomorrow in Western Pennsylvania.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
9:42. The wartime consigliere for Andrew Ibelis, Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta, Cuomo, King Cuomo I, has now gone through 6 weeks of a jury trial about corruption. And apparently they've indicated to the federal judge hearing the case that they are deadlocked again. Although I call this the Yenta jury, because they're constantly complaining. I can't get home. I got to get back to work. My kids are sick. So they let the jury go each day at about 2:30, which I've never heard of before. But anyway, on the line to discuss it is Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Ken.
It's good to be here.
Okay, so I've never heard of a jury that breaks every day at like 2:30 because one of the female jurors' kids are sick. She's got to go home. I mean... Is this a Yenta jury like I'm describing it, or do you think they're seriously deadlocked?
I think they're probably seriously deadlocked. And, you know, I did actually cover a trial once in California. It was Hillary Clinton's chief fundraiser, where the case ended every day at 1:30 in the afternoon because someone, one of the jurors, had to go to work or had to do something. So I have seen it before. In this case, I do think they're deadlocked. And I don't know, you know, what we don't know is how are they deadlocked? In other words, are the majority of them saying convict and then you have one or two who are saying no, or is it the other way around? That's going to be what's interesting. What are they deadlocked on?
Well, I got to assume, since the federal judge sent them back again to deliberate and they'll be back tomorrow, that this will be the last time around. She'll give an Allen charge, try a depth charge, anything to get them to change their positions. But if not, it'll be a mistrial, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And I think that's where it is heading. It doesn't seem like they're moving any closer. You know, they came back after the storm last week, the storm that wasn't. They had a day off, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday, and they came back and they did deliberating. They didn't get any closer, apparently, and they're still deadlocked on Monday. So, and it was weird because they went in and sent out a note at like 9:30 in the morning saying, we're still deadlocked. They didn't even try today before trying to get it over with. And then she sent them back in and they deliberated the rest of the time.
Well, it's got to put a little bit of a smile on the face of Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was in the Bronx at the Jackson houses giving a inspection, talking about how, as the former head of HUD during the Clinton administration, he knows all about public housing. And this is what he had to say after his tour and discussion with the tenants.
It is just shocking that in New York State, we would have people who are subjected to these conditions. And on behalf of the people of the state, I apologize to the NYCHA residents because they deserve better and they'll get better.
Wow, he's shocked. Where has he been all these years, Ken? I mean, not only is the head of NYCHA, but the attorney general of the state, governor, now hoping to go three terms. It's like, wow, I'm shocked. There's gambling in Casablanca.
Boy, I know this isn't going to endear me to you, but you sound a lot like Mayor de Blasio now, because that's what his response has been to all of this, you know, which is that, you know, he's blamed the state and the feds for not providing enough money and over the years. And he has said, you know, or his people have said, isn't this the governor who was the federal housing secretary for 8 years or at HUD for 8 years? Isn't this the governor who was the attorney general? You know, he's been around for 30 years, and now he's just learning that NYCHA has issues. That's certainly what the mayor said. The mayor himself didn't say it today because he's not in New York City. He's out in D.C., I think, today after being in the weekend out in the Southwest. So he had his deputy mayor and others basically surrogates saying it for him.
But this spurt, because this really is a spurt of vitriol, being directed at de Blasio while he's out of town by Cuomo, it really has to do with something I read in your column this morning, at least I believe, that when it was floated out last week that Cynthia Nixon might challenge him with de Blasio's team helping her, meaning Cuomo, in the Democratic primary for the governor's nod, that he went off the hook, Cuomo. It threw him. Yes or no?
Yeah, there's an old adage, never let them see you sweat. They always let you see them sweat. And in this case, I think, you know, what I wrote today was that the Cynthia Nixon team, her camp, was quite pleased, actually. They think that they got under the governor's skin, that he's scared of them, and his reaction, his attacks on both her and de Blasio and other things that occurred are a sign to them. They called it encouraging. That you know, that he fears that if she gets in the race.
Well, it's amazing, Ken, because he blames the mayor for problems on Rikers, problems in NYCHA, and yet when it comes to the subway system, he's like Pontius Pilate. Not my problem, you know.
Well, he blames the mayor for that too.
Yeah. So, where do you see all of this going as they bicker back and forth?
That's going to be the question. In regards to NYCHA, it looks like the governor's heading toward you know, giving an emergency proclamation. Exactly what it will do, we don't know. It could be anything from replacing the board to just kind of putting in a provision that they can let out contracts to do the repairs without going through the bureaucracy of NYCHA. It would almost be like having a monitor. So there's different options. He says he's talked to the city council and the mayor's office about it, but it looks like he's getting closer to doing something.
It might be nice for him just to pick up the phone, talk to de Blasio, and de Blasio talk to him about resolving the problems for the NYCHA tenants. You know, just a normal conversation like they used to have when they were friends, when they both worked for HUD, when they attended one another's family outings and gatherings. What happened here, Ken? How did this chasm take place?
It really is. Well, you know, look, Andrew Cuomo does not always play well in the sandbox. He's never had to deal with de Blasio as a near equal. The governor does trump the mayor, but he certainly hasn't liked it. This really started right at the beginning over the issue of early childhood, pre-K funding. The mayor kept pushing to a millionaire's tax to pay for pre-K programs, and the governor said, we'll give you the money, but we're not raising taxes. And it really started there. But I always say the one story in all the years I've been here I regret writing was after de Blasio got elected the first time, and they promised this was going to be a different dynamic. Governors and mayors always have tension, but their longstanding friendship, you're going to see something you've never seen between a governor and a mayor. And in a sense, they're right. It's even worse than we've seen. It's worse than Pataki Giuliani. Maybe not as bad as when Lindsay was around, but it's bad. It's really bad.
Do appreciate that, Ken. Love it. Albany Bureau Chief of New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. I say bold feathers, especially Cuomo when he was head of HUD for the Clinton administration in charge of all public housing across the country. He's saying that NYCHA housing was worse than the Robert Taylor Homes in Chicago, Cabrini Green, Rockwell Gardens, Ida B. Wells. Huh? Is he out of his mind? Boy, what a stretch. And what an Italian stallion, supreme cuisine battle to the end.